Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about our Minnesota National Guard Red Bull soldiers preparing to deploy in another important mission, and we'll meet the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Director of Claims and Outreach. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard has long trained for emergency contingencies when civilian authorities call for help. We have trained for severe flooding, out-of-control fires, and search and rescue missions. But there is a new threat our soldiers and airmen are training for now. One of my top priorities is to increase the National Guard's capacity to combat cyber warfare. Cyber warfare is internet-based conflict involving politically motivated attacks on information and information systems. Cyber warfare attacks can disable official websites and networks, disrupt or disable essential services, steal or alter classified data, and cripple financial systems. The Minnesota National Guard has full-time staff whose job it is to track cyber issues and keep us ahead of a cyber attack. We have also identified soldiers and airmen within the force who are capable of being called up to fight a cyber attack or cyber-triggered traditional emergency. Such an emergency would require a coordinated response among several agencies and levels of government. We are working with other state, local, and federal agencies to develop these relationships and to develop and train with plans of execution for varying scenarios. I am pleased to tell you that the Department of Military Affairs conducts cyber response rehearsals annually and is consistently preparing to address a cyber warfare threat in Minnesota head-on.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade will deploy its Headquarters Company and 2nd Battalion 147th Assault Helicopter Battalion as part of a task force to conduct aviation operations and security cooperation activities in support of the U.S. Army Central Command. And here to join us today to talk about it is the commander of the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, Colonel Greg Thingvold. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Colonel, I'd like to thank you for taking time on your leave before you're going to deploy to come in and chat with us. We've got another big deployment coming up, and Minnesota National Guard's deployed a lot of times since September 11th, 2001, haven't they?
We have. It's amazing to look back and see all the different units that we have in the state of Minnesota and the various missions they've been asked to do. And just in the aviation community alone, we're going on our minimum second time for all aviation units deploying from the company level all the way up to now the brigade level.
And Colonel, before we dig into this deployment a little bit, can you tell me a little bit about your career? How long have you been in the military?
Sure. My career has spanned my 31st anniversary of serving this past January. So started out right after high school and worked my way, started on the enlisted side and started in the Air National Guard over at the 133rd and jump ship in the Army side in 87, and then I had my eyes set to get to flight school, and it was kind of, from there, it was just looking forward to the aviation part of really what I wanted to do. That was my passion, I guess, to get into aviation, and have served in all different levels of the aviation community since then, from company commander all the way up now to brigade commander.
So you became a helicopter pilot in 1989?
I did. In 89, went to Fort Rucker about August of 89 and spent about a year down there and came out a UH-1 pilot and flew the Huey back here in the state of Minnesota for, it was about 12 years. Most of my time is in the UH-1 and then spent a little bit of time in the AH-1 Cobra. We had for a very short time in Minnesota a Cobra attack battalion, the AH-1. And so I flew that for about 3.5 years. And then various jobs along the way was kind of in and out of aviation. But then when I finally came back to flying in the early 2000s, got my transition in the UH-60 Blackhawk.
And how's that helicopter, the Blackhawk?
It is an amazing platform. You get used to the UH-1 in its simplicity, you know, very reliable, maintenance-wise, you know, relatively easy to maintain. And then you look at that Blackhawk, very complex, and you just kind of wonder, you know, how will that thing perform? And I can tell you with our year deployment that we did in Iraq in 2007 to 2008, I commanded the battalion. And of the 30 aircraft, we flew upwards of over 18,000 flight hours. And that aircraft performed amazing. I mean, you turn that thing on and fly for a 6, 7, 8 hour mission and never shut it down, and it would just hum along. Pretty amazing.
Colonel, I wish the listeners could see it. When I asked you about a Blackhawk, you started smiling from ear to ear. You must like that aircraft.
It's a great aircraft. It's very durable. It's one of those kinds of aircraft that you just want to be in for the kinds of missions that we do nowadays, especially in the hot climates. And again, we're going to Kuwait, but you know, the year that we were in Iraq, you know, when you're flying 115 to 120 degree days, it has the capability and the power to perform well in those environments. So you can still load them up with 10, 13 passengers in the back, and it just keeps on going. It's an amazing aircraft.
And Colonel, you were born and raised here in Minnesota?
Was born here in Minneapolis, ultimately went to high school in White Bear Lake, graduated from there in 82 when it used to be a couple of different high schools, graduated from White Bear Mariner. But a little bit of a traitor because I moved from White Bear and ultimately raised my family in Stillwater, Minnesota, and that's where we reside today.
But you're still in Minnesota.
I'm still
part of the Minnesota National Guard.
I am, yep.
We're
absolutely
speaking with Colonel Greg Thingvold, commander of the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade of the Minnesota National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, we've got a deployment pending. Can you tell us a little bit about how many Red Bull soldiers are going with you?
Absolutely. So from the state of Minnesota, it's just over 220 that we'll be bringing from the state. The brigade headquarters and the assault battalion headquarters, the battalion that I commanded back in Iraq. And so those headquarters organizations will, you know, soon here we'll go down to Fort Hood, get our training done down at Fort Hood, and then we move overseas. But we'll be in charge, or at least the brigade, I'll be in charge of a task force of about 1,200 soldiers made up from active duty, reserve, and the National Guard. And then that task force will conduct various missions in Kuwait, primarily missions that will support some of the regional countries and their militaries, military-to-military engagements, increasing capacity through joint training ventures that we'll get into when we're in the Gulf region.
Colonel, is that fairly common these days to combine active duty, guard, and reserve and perform a mission like this?
Well, this one, I think, a little unique because of the nature of a combat aviation brigade to have an active duty attack battalion, a Army Reserve Support Battalion, Aviation Support Battalion, and then the National Guard headquarters. And so kind of a true multi-compo organization. It's not uncommon to get plugged in from, you know, the National Guard to the active duty like we did back in Iraq. Our battalion served under an active duty combat aviation brigade, the 12th Cav out of Germany. And so that kind of pairing to work together has been common. But at the brigade level, I think this one's unique because we've got three distinct battalion organizations, one each from a different combo, active duty, guard, and reserve. So I'm looking forward to it.
Should be exciting, sir. Here in Minnesota, we're fortunate to have a facility like Camp Ripley up north, and I understand you've been able to accomplish a lot more of your training here closer to home than you were some years back.
It is nice. Camp Ripley really is a premier training facility in that we can easily accomplish all those individual tasks that we would otherwise normally have done at the mobilization station. So to go from these experiences that we've had in the past from 4, 5, 6 month deployment, or at least the training at the mob stations, now like ours cut down to 6 weeks, is because we're able to do a lot of these individual tasks at home station. So the weapons qualifications, combatives, first aid, all those needed tasks are easily accomplished now, right? Really right in our backyard.
So instead of being away from home an extra 4 months, it's only an extra 6 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really pays dividends. It's just, you know, the days of old where you're gone for 16, 17, 18 months, I mean, we're over. I mean, it's nice. The mobilizations are shorter now, but the trade-off is we get it done here. Once we deploy, though, the mobilizations are shortened just enough so now that we don't get the environmental leave, which was the R&R leave, another word for R&R leave. So now when we go in a couple weeks, we won't be seeing our families again until we get back end of April, early May next year.
But there was a few more months they could be home with their families, easier on the soldiers and easier on their families.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this deployment to Kuwait and your mission capabilities and the soldiers that you'll be leading. We've been speaking to Colonel Greg Thingvold, the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, talking about a pending employment. And Colonel Thingvold, we were talking about your background in the military. You've been in 31 years, and this deployment coming up, and it's going to be a big command. You're going to be in command of, in charge of active duty guard and reserve forces. That's going to be a little bit of a challenge, isn't it?
It will, but one of the things you really come to rely on over the years is building that good command relationship with the subordinate units and just leveraging your staff and communicate, and things go well. You know, I anticipate that we're going to have similar challenges as any unit does when they go downrange. You know, this is not combat we're going into. It's a slightly different environment. We always kind of have to have that eye towards, you know, the what if, but really we're there to partner with some of the other nations. And but there's a lot of soldiers that have a lot of combat experience. And when they come into this kind of environment, it can be a little bit of a challenge. So really the key is between the big missions that we'll be doing, the training partnerships that we'll be doing, we're going to really have to drive our own destiny of training just to kind of keep people on the edge and you know, give people their needed free time, but really keep them engaged while we're there. That's really the important thing.
We were talking earlier, and it sounds like you've got a good team that you've deployed with before, and you've got some good officers and a sergeant major and a chaplain, and you're pretty happy with your team.
We do. I am blessed to have Sergeant Major Jim Campson as my sergeant major, and this will be his third long deployment, and his experience is going to serve us well, going to serve him well. Chaplain Rittmaster, our chaplain, another just quality guy. And I tell you, a couple key positions, we're solid. And also feel just very good about how our staff is made up. Some of the staff are the same guys I served with in Iraq. And so we know and have operated together long enough that and know how to work well. And so I really look forward to that, to be able to leverage a lot of that experience of that team again on this deployment while we're in Kuwait for about 10 months.
And Colonel, the Minnesota National Guard's deployed repeatedly over the last decade or so. So you go through some pretty sophisticated deployment training for their soldiers and their families.
We do. And it really starts almost a year out. We try to get the soldiers as early on to some of the needed schools that we might not otherwise get them to, because maybe the budgets aren't really there to get them to all the schools that they need. So we've been in that process to get the soldiers ready, but then really right behind that is getting the families ready. And a few of the things that we do, one is a family prep academy, and it involves, again, all the support networks that we have grown to really enjoy in the state of Minnesota, from the Yellow Ribbon networks to all the service providers. That covers everything from education, finances, relationships, healthcare providers, to really lay the groundwork for what kind of resources are out there and then how to access them. So we know that going into the deployment, to minimize those stressors of life when the soldiers go downrange and the families are back home to face all the tasks that they need to get through. And so to arm them with the information that they need is a combat multiplier for us.
So the families are prepared. They know who to call if they need help. And
they do. And it also dives into the family readiness groups. Each of our companies has a strong family readiness group and a family readiness group leader team. And And so when those kind of issues come up, sometimes you just feel overwhelmed. You don't know where to go. And so to have a person that you know within the company, a spouse, or could even be a parent that serves in the family readiness groups, that are able to help walk people through challenges of life when life can get kind of crazy. And so from that side, too, we're very well set. Family readiness group leaders have been in place, trained, and that network is already strong.
And Colonel, I understand that you and your soldiers and their families had an opportunity to come together for a nice steak dinner.
We did a couple weeks ago. Serving our troops really is a class act, amazing organization. And that event, you know, is just another key milestone of that whole preparation. It is an opportunity to tell our story a little bit, but also just invite that extended network. I mean, when you have 220 soldiers deployed, but you've got an audience of 2,500, it's just that really almost a visual reminder of how deep our networks go. When one person goes, the extended effect of 10, 12, 14, 20 family members. And so to bring them together, to be able to share a meal and just have a nice afternoon together is a very meaningful moment that we all enjoyed. It was, and it's just a fun way to see how people serve. When we saw the Minnesota Saints there, what a great way for them to serve, to be able to recognize what families go through on these long deployments. And they were all just very thankful to be a part of that event. So great organization. Look forward to, I think we're going to do an event with them while we're in Kuwait this next year as well.
So not only the soldiers sacrifice, but the family sacrifice when they're gone. And that's why there's so many good support groups here in Minnesota to help those families while you're out there so they can focus on the mission.
There is, you know, for us, the, and like a lot of Guard organizations, but it's not surprising that the CAB and the 2147 cut across 43 communities in the state. And so the ability over time for Minnesota to grow the Yellow Ribbon networks across all of our communities that have units is, again, one of those combat multipliers that's really hard to put words to, because it is a local organization of volunteers and support and efforts to, again, minimize that long duration away. When things come up, you've got a local network that you can go to, and so we're covered. We're covered well in the state of Minnesota.
We're speaking with Colonel Greg Thingvold from Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, we're coming down on about 5 minutes. Can we touch a little bit on the mission and capabilities? What type of things will you be working on over there, and what type of things are you able to do?
Absolutely. The mission's a little bit multifaceted. We've got the ability to partner with some of the regional countries and do some training events, we call them military-to-military engagements. And it's really about building capacity through training events. Some of the previous training events have occurred in countries like Jordan, obviously Kuwait, with their forces, Qatar, UAE, Saudi Arabia, just to name a few. And so I would expect that those training partnerships will still be in place. And there's not a lot scheduled over any given rotation. We'll be involved in a handful, but then we'll also be planning the ones for our for the organization that will eventually replace us. But there's also opportunities to work with Fifth Fleet, the Navy. They have some of their ships in the Gulf region. And so to be able to get our crews deck landing qualified can add capacity in various ways. There might be things that go on where some resupply or medevac type operations or just some joint training to understand capabilities that the Army has alongside the Navy is one that has grown over the years. So we look forward to that. Obviously, being a Midwestern state, don't have a lot of opportunity to do those deck landings. And so we're excited. We've sent all of our crew members through Dunker qualification. So that's one of the prerequisites we had to get done. So even myself had to go down to Fort Rucker and get dunked and figure out how to crawl out of sinking airframes. It's a little stressful, but we've got everybody through that. So we're ready to roll.
So, sir, when you finally leave Minnesota, you're going down to, is it Fort Hood, to do some additional training?
Correct, Fort Hood. And so we'll spend 6 weeks down there, and we'll progress from the individual training that we've done here in the state of Minnesota and move up to some collective level training that will cut across maintenance activities for our support battalion, especially for the staffs at the battalion and the brigade level. We'll get into some command post exercises and aviation training exercises that will kind of throw in some of that rigor of the potential environment that we're going into, opportunity to stress the staff, stress the commanders, and just get us ready for, you know, some of those contingencies that we might face when we're downrange.
So all this training the last year and the stuff you'll do at Fort Hood, all of that so that once you get in theater, you can get up to speed as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Really allows us to hit the ground running. There was about 15 of us that went to Kuwait a few months ago and visited the unit that we're going to replace. And so we were able to get a good look at the missions that they're doing. And so we've got a great sight picture. We're taking that, some of those lessons learned for that two-week trip that we did, and incorporating in the time at Fort Hood. So we'll just build upon some of the scenarios that we know are already in play, and again, really hit the ground running when we get there, end of July, first part of August.
Commander, it sounds like you're prepared and you've got everything planned out. You're ready to go. Are you excited about this?
We are. You know, nobody, I think, really looks forward to leaving family and loved ones for this length of time. But again, what a unique opportunity to be in a part of the world and engage with some of the military forces in the various countries around there, and just, you know, be able to look each other in the eye and just train together. It's very unique. And a lot of us have the combat experience, so this will be different. And but I think in a very unique and exciting way.
Colonel, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners and how we can support you while you're gone?
Well, I think, like we've talked about, it's really plugging into the local level. If people have a desire, check into their Yellow Ribbon networks first. The Beyond Yellow Ribbon website is a great place to start that the National Guard maintains, and plenty of opportunities to serve in that area. Also, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, another great way. I mean, it can simply be by donating $5, $10, whatever, to that great organization and the work that they do on behalf of our families.
Colonel, we hope you have a great deployment and safe travels and safe home, and we look forward to talking to you while you're in Kuwait.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today, sir. This is Colonel Greg Thingvold, the commander of the 34th Combat Aviation Brigade of the Minnesota National Guard. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to talk about claims and outreach. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Director of Claims and Outreach. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Did you know that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is not part of the federal VA? We are a separate state organization dedicated to helping veterans and their families navigate the complex federal VA system and provide quality health care to our state's heroes. The Veterans Home Division provides a continuum of long-term care for its residents, with a strong emphasis on remembering and recognizing the service and sacrifices of all veterans. The 5 veterans homes operating in Minnesota, located in Minneapolis, Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Fergus Falls, focus on providing the excellent care and services that Minnesotans expect for our state's military heroes. In addition to overseeing the 5 state veterans homes, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs helps eligible veterans and their families secure state and federal benefits and provides programs and services relating to higher education, benefits, burials, claims, outreach, and veteran preference. Key partnerships include veteran service organizations, county veteran service officers, and a number of public and private service providers.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalado. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Claim Division represents veterans and their dependents who seek benefits from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs with regard to compensation, non-service-connected pension, vocational rehabilitation, insurance, and educational benefits. The division also participates in hundreds of community events each year, educating veterans about the benefits they have earned. And joining us to talk about that today is Ron Quadi, the Director of Claims and Outreach from the MDVA. Ron, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Very glad to be here.
Ron, I understand you were in the military as well.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me what service?
Yes, sir. I joined the Navy right out of high school. And while I was in the Navy, I was selected by the Marine Corps out of my core school training to train with the Marines and serve with the Marines. So I started out on one path in what we call the Blue Navy. And during that, after being selected with the Marine Corps, I was able to serve on the green side as well.
So how many years were you in the service?
It was a little over 4 years.
And how long did it take you to recover from that Navy Marine Corps thing?
I'm not sure if I have, but I'll call that a very prideful thing.
All right. Ron, how long have you been with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
I've been going on about 9 years now with the department.
9 years, and you're currently the Director of Claims and Outreach. What does that mean?
Yes, sir. I direct or manage the Claims and Field Operations Divisions, which include the St. Paul Regional Office, the Fargo Regional Office, our Tribal Veteran Service Officer Division, our Outreach Division, Woman Veterans Program, and now our Gold Star Families Program. And what that really means when you get down to it is we employ staff to advocate for and represent Minnesota veterans to the federal VA, all the way up to and including hearings, Board of Veterans Appeals hearings with circuit judges. So it can mean a variety of different things when you talk about the different programs that we represent people in. It can include a lot of case management as well.
It's a big job description, Ron. When do you sleep?
That's a good question. There's some late nights and a lot of responsibility there. We take the responsibility of representing our veterans and their family members very serious.
Well, Ron, there's been a lot of stuff in the news lately about the federal VA system, and of course we were hearing things a month or two ago about claims and how long it takes for claims to be processed, and now we're hearing things about the VA healthcare system not running properly.
Correct.
How are we doing here in Minnesota?
Well, I'm very glad to report that from our perspective, from a State Department's perspective, as an advocate, we're doing very well in Minnesota. There are obviously some national issues, attention on backlogs, and now, you know, recently with the attention being placed on the VA medical centers in certain areas of the nation, one of which not being St. Paul. I serve on the Consumer Advisory Board with the VA Medical Center in Minneapolis, and we are being reported. It was just last week it was reported to me from the leadership there, including the director, associate director, and the chiefs of the medical center, that their audits are nearly complete, all the way out through their C-box in the state of Minnesota, and the violations that are being heard of on the news are not being reported here in Minnesota. On a personal level, we talk with a lot of veterans, and we're always asking them about their experiences, not only with the regional office and their claims experience, but with their health care at the VA medical centers. And I'm very pleased to report that in most cases, you're always going to have that small percentage, but in most cases, folks are very happy with the health care and the service they're receiving in Minnesota.
We're speaking with Ron Quadi, the Director of Claims and Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Ron, we're talking about Minnesota here and the federal VA system and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a lot of the county veteran service officers on, and they tell me that there's an open door at the VA healthcare system, and if there was a problem, they'd be in there raising heck about it. Apparently, from what I hear from them, and I'm a patient there, I've seen no evidence of any problem here in Minnesota.
Correct. You know, we work very closely with the County Veteran Service Officers and the County Veteran Service Officer Association as a whole and as a department. That is absolutely true. If you have an issue, we have a great partnership from top to bottom in the state of Minnesota, from the director's office down to the actual providers, the chiefs. County Veteran Service Officers are in constant communication with my office, with the department, and we, at a moment's notice, can get through to the right individuals to talk about any issues that might come up. And I can tell you from personal experience, most of the issues that come up are you know, easily resolved. We get the team together, and that means the county, the state, and the feds, and we work these issues out.
Ron, I think there seems to be a lot of confusion or misconception with some of our veterans here in Minnesota and probably all over the country. On one hand, there's the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, which is a federal institution. And then here in Minnesota, we're fortunate to have the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Can you tell us how they're different and how you work together? Can you sort that out for us?
Sure, Tom. We are the advocate. We are the power of attorney for VA purposes. When a veteran sees their local representative, which in most cases is the county veteran service officer, they're filing certain paperworks, legal paperworks. A 2122 is the form that a person would use to assign an accredited representative. That accredited representative then would be our claims division. And our claims division, their role then is to represent that veteran to the federal government in a variety of ways to make sure that the feds follow through with the promises they've made to take care of both compensation, pension, and health care.
And Ron, we've said when we've talked to these county veteran service officers, and we have many of them on, they say the door for veterans to anything veteran or veteran-related is your county veteran service officer.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Go get your DD-214 and go see him.
Yes, sir. And I would suggest as soon as possible. The reason I mention as soon as possible is there are certain presumptive windows, especially off of active duty, that most people are not aware of. One of the things we tell people is make sure you make that appointment at the earliest possible window. There might be more benefits available the earlier you get in to see your county veteran service officer.
So there's some windows that might close, and there's also the fact that they might not need them now. But you might need them later, and your family might need them later. So go register with your county veteran service officer, have a chat with them, have a cup of coffee, and be prepared.
Yes, sir. Those are benefits that are earned.
All right, Ron, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the outreach side of your position as Director of Claims and Outreach with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking with Ron Quaddy, the Director of Claims and Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ron, I understand that your main offices, the MDVA offices, went through a little bit of a transformation themselves.
Yes, sir. In the regional office in St. Paul, we executed a four-year project and plan to move from where our space was in the regional office or in the federal building, the Whipple building, from the first floor, then up to a temporary position on the third floor where MEPS is located, to our permanent space on ground floor and what's being referred to now as POA row. And I'm very pleased to announce that our doors are open. We're completely moved in. We have what I consider to be very professional space. Our plan in developing the office was a 5 to 10 year growth plan with plans to expand staffing. We have 23 claims rep offices in the office. We now have a new state-of-the-art conference room with teleprogramming and the ability to train online through our equipment there, which is very exciting for us. In the future, we plan to provide trainings there to all county veteran service offices in the state of Minnesota.
So this is the federal building out by the airport right across from the 133rd Air National Guard.
Yes, sir.
And it's finally done?
Our office is done. The building is not done, but the parking lot is also done, so that we're very excited about that as well.
All right, so it should be a little more user-friendly.
It is, and when you mention user-friendly, our focus and emphasis in the office was on our reception area. We put a lot of time and effort into making sure that was a very comfortable, warm environment for our claimants and their family members, and it really, I think, reflects the professional level service that's being provided in our claims division by our staff.
So once again, quickly, if a veteran has an issue, start with the County Veteran Service Officer. And they can help fill out the forms and start the claims process. But then the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is one of the advocates available to help the veterans.
Yes, sir. And in our office, we have a unique relationship with the American Legion in the state of Minnesota. We represent both Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and all American Legion claims throughout the state. So we are, in the grand scheme of things, we hold the majority of the claims business that's being done in the federal building.
So all of the claims that you process and all the veterans in Minnesota, the commissioner tells us about 365,000 of them and maybe about 100,000 of them have some kind of claim. How much of an economic impact does that have on Minnesota?
It has a huge impact. We're constantly working with veterans and their family members. I mentioned claimants a lot of the times because we tend to forget that it includes both the veteran and family members. But we have huge economic impacts in terms of the federal dollars that are gained by successfully completing these claims or winning these claims. Those are federal dollars that come into the budgets of local veterans and their families, and they're spending them in our local hardware stores. They're spending them in our local grocery stores. And I think it really helps the economy here in the state of Minnesota.
So, Ron, you've been there for almost a decade. What changes have you seen? Technology has to have changed things, and what kind of transformation or changes do you see coming in the future?
Well, that's an excellent question, Tom. We are in the midst of a significant shift in our business and how our business is run. I've seen in my time with the department an incredible amount of change in terms of technology and environments. So not only do we physically move an office, but we also virtually move our business model. And the reason I mention it that way is VA is going through what they literally call the transformation. And the VA transformation is what they're calling the shift from paper claims to virtual claims. And the work that we're doing as advocates in representing our claimants needs to shift with that ideology and with that environment. So we are constantly taking a look at areas of improvement and a constant environment of improvement and engaging with technology to make sure that we're ahead of the power curve when it comes to communicating with the VA regional office while representing our claimants.
And it appears that you're coordinating your efforts really well with the County Veteran Service Officers, the Veteran Service Organizations, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yes, sir. That conversation is ongoing, and it is one that that keeps all the partners involved. We've been working for years now in developing information systems that are prepared to communicate both from the county to the state and to the federal organization when the time comes able to do so.
Sounds like you're doing a great job, Ron. We just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I do appreciate the invitation. I'm very happy to be here. I would like to recognize you, Tom, for your service. Thank you for your service. And I would say to the listeners that if you have not contacted your County Veterans Service Office, please do so. There are a range of benefits available, earned benefits, and once you're engaged with that system, the benefits include local, state, and federal. So it's worth a trip in, as you say, to have that hot cup of coffee. I think people will be pleasantly surprised with not only the benefits, but the representation that's available to them.
Thanks for joining us today, Ron.
Thank you, sir.
That was Ron Quadi, Director of Claims and Outreach for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio, Command Sergeant Major.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here as always.
I understand you've been doing a little traveling recently. Can you tell us about where you've been?
I sure have. You know, last week I was able to travel along with some of the members of our recruiting and retention battalion to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. We actually went down there to look at the basic training and the reception station operations. We just wanted to ensure that we're preparing our new enlistees the best we can to be successful when they arrive there for basic training. And, you know, it was such a great trip, almost kind of a homecoming of sorts, as it's where I attended basic training back in 1984. So some of the things have changed since I was last there, obviously, but many of the things that I remember are still in place. So it was really great to get an inside look at the program and be able to help prep our recruits.
Sergeant Major, you didn't take any remedial training, did you?
Not this time.
So you mentioned that you attended basic training there many years ago, just a few. What's changed since you were there?
You know, I think one of the biggest changes that I noticed is that when I attended, females and males trained separately, whereas, of course, now they train together. That's right in line with how the Army's changed, too, and with how the Women in Combat Initiative is changing, where females can serve and what they can do. You know, another new addition was the creation of a unit that assists our recruits who are either recovering from an injury or just need some more assistance with physical fitness. They specifically target the areas that the recruits need to improve, and they design fitness and recovery plans and ensure that all of our soldiers achieve their best conditioning levels before they leave basic training. You know, of course, some things never change, and the drill sergeants were ever present there, starting the process of creating soldiers out of recruits from the time they got to the reception station. Fort Jackson, you know, it boasts the shortest time in the reception, so that was pretty fun. And at the reception station, they get their uniforms, they do their in-processing, and they do their medical checks, and then they get right off to the job of making soldiers and training into basic training.
I can hear them now, down for 20.
Yes.
So what will you do differently now to ensure that our new recruits are as prepared as possible to go to basic training and be successful?
You know, there are some key areas that we always focus on, like their physical fitness and their resilience, and, of course, basic military knowledge. One of the things we will do to ensure we discuss with our new recruits what they can expect at basic training, I think that's really important. And we can supplement that discussion with pictures and videos of the training so that they know what to expect. We try to expose them to situations before they leave, so once they arrive, they already know how to handle what they're going to be facing. Another thing that we like to do is to use the same checklists and forms with our recruits here that they're going to see at basic training. That way we can ensure that our new recruits already know what's expected of them before they arrive. The biggest things we can do for our new soldiers is to welcome them into our formations, and we want to prepare them for the training ahead and support them and their families throughout their training. This is something the Minnesota National Guard, as you know, is really good at already, and Minnesota as a whole is great at. You know, given that now only 1% of Americans currently wear the uniform, we really need to ensure that we prepare and train and support them from the first day on.
Sergeant Major, that sounded like a great trip to make sure that everything you're doing gets our Minnesota National Guard recruits ready for the big basic training when they go.
That's the goal.
Thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Greg Thingbold, Ron Quaddy, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we get an update from our Vietnam Veterans of America. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.